our next patient needed a different approach. She has hormone receptor negative HER2 positive cancer. Pam, who lives in Orlando, Florida, has been fighting metastatic breast cancer for about 5 years now.
Well, about 6 years ago, I started playing tennis. It was really important to me when I was going through treatment to keep everything normal. And so there were many days that I would do tennis practice in the morning and go straight to the doctor for my treatment in the afternoon, still in my tennis clothes.
That was awful.
That was fun.
That was fun.
Yay.
Thank you. When
I
was diagnosed with cancer, I can just remember thinking, this is not happening to me. I mean, 37 years old, that's young. Like, this is not happening. But it did. But how, you know, how do you share this with your family? People just initially said, you should start a journal. So I did. When I last left you, things had gotten pretty bad, and I was having some anxiety about stopping the treatments, both of which they assured me was completely normal. I don't really have the words to express the feelings and emotions I have at the moment. But then I also hear my heart, the part of me that is a woman facing a mastectomy that will make me less a woman. The initial stage was that I would have the mastectomy first.
You can have your eyes open or closed throughout the procedure.
But they ran the other scans. The PET scan showed that it had also spread to my liver. The mastectomy was no longer the target.
The fact that she was HER2 positive allowed us to pursue options that we might not be able to pursue in other patients with breast cancer. And she would be eligible for one of our clinical trials that used a drug called trastuzumab, a monoclonal antibody, along with two chemotherapy drugs. Hi, young lady. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you today?
How have you been feeling?
Feeling good.
I would get these two chemos every week, and then every third week, they would add the trastuzumab. My scans were every 3 weeks for a while, then 6 weeks, and it was all just to see if the chemo was working on the liver. And once they saw that that was the case, they did decide to go ahead and remove the breast. I did another 6 or 7 months of chemo, and then the trastuzumab on top of that. My friend that sat with me at chemo said, you're at mile 24 of your marathon. And she's right. I can almost see the end. It's right around the corner.
The cancer in her breast improved. The spot in her liver disappeared. She's off of chemotherapy and only on the monoclonal antibody, and still without any evidence of cancer. The thing that is encouraging about her particular case is if, unfortunately, we do have a recurrence, it's been quite some time since she's been treated with chemotherapy. One of the first things to think about would be to treat her with the chemotherapy drugs she originally received, along with the monoclonal antibody that she's continued to receive.
About the mammogram.
Okay. The scans were completely clean. Prayers from all of you have been heard and answered. I'm happy and I'm healthy and I'm living a life that I didn't think I would be given the chance to see.
Off school.
Every anniversary, every year is a gift. This just happens to be the big one. Everybody says if you've made it 5 years, that's huge.
Hey, wait up.
I've been given a second chance.
Love you guys. Bye, sweet pea.
Dr. Bradishar.
Well, I think this case illustrates a number of things, and I think the most important thing is it reflects the evolution of how we think about breast cancer, and for that matter, many cancers. And rather looking at it as a single disease, we're starting to be able to target subsets of breast cancer appropriately based on characteristics of the tumor. So we talked about endocrine therapy for patients who are hormone receptor positive, and I think now we know that we have therapies that are effective in the subset of patients who are HER2 positive. And really the biggest challenge we have going forward is the number of drugs we have and trying to figure out how optimally to use them, how to use them in sequence. And I think that's really the subject of a lot of the clinical trials we have currently ongoing.
She presented with metastatic disease when it was discovered it was already in her liver. Unfortunately, that's a minority of patients, probably less than 10%.
I'd just like to make a couple of comments as well about Pam's presentation. I think it's important for the audience to understand that she did present with disease in her liver, and her mastectomy was appropriately postponed at that time. Having the breast removed later on is quite controversial. There are some studies looking back at patients that have local treatment in a stage 4 setting that show that they do somewhat better. So that's really an issue that is hypothesis generating for clinical trials. And I think the second point I'd like to make on both Pam's case and the previous one, Kellen, is both of them were premenopausal young women when they did present. Both of them have daughters. And certainly thinking about genetic testing for both of them, considering the potential risk for their daughters, would be appropriate to counsel them to have too.
Pam is continuing with trastuzumab and doing well, but for the patient whose cancer is not under control, what would be the next step for them?
In addition to trastuzumab, there are other targeted agents for HER2-positive patients. The classic example is a drug called lapatinib, which in conjunction with a drug like capecitabine has shown efficacy in people whose tumors have progressed on trastuzumab, but also in some people who have been on trastuzumab alone, trastuzumab with other chemotherapy agents, or in conjunction with this newer targeted agent, lapatinib may be useful. There are, again, several choices here.
And I think the strategy that a lot of oncologists have adopted is that pathway is very important. So even if a patient progresses, we still try and exploit the anti-HER2 pathway using agents that, whether it's lapatinib alone, lapatinib plus trastuzumab, or even now looking in an investigational basis, trying to reverse resistance to some of these agents. So I think that as we go forward, probably the number of agents that we have available will expand. And of course, the challenge is always how to optimally use them.
Well, up till now, we've talked primarily about endocrine therapies and other targeted agents, and we've discussed some other treatments in those contexts, but let's really focus in now on chemotherapy. What are the current issues there, Dr. Gradishar?
Well, we have a long list of chemotherapy agents that are available, and so part of the decision tree when we think about any given patient is what have they gotten before. So again, if we have somebody that had early-stage breast cancer, they may have received adjuvant chemotherapy, and we have to take into account what was the composition of their therapy during that period of their illness. So you may not want to use the same agents again. The second thing is whether or not there is some advantage to using certain combinations of drugs as opposed to giving single agents sequentially. And there is a reality that when you make cocktails of things, particularly with respect to chemotherapy, you're actually buying more in the way of side effects, and I think it's often arguable how much added advantage there is. So again, we individualize our treatment choices based on the patient sitting in front of us, and for one patient, a combination of drugs may be appropriate, whereas for another, using sequential agents, hopefully over a longer period of time, is the right choice.
If you use combinations, you can generally show that the response rates are higher, or maybe that progression-free survival is longer, but you can't necessarily prove that overall survival is benefited, and you can certainly see more side effects with combinations. So combinations may be appropriate, particularly for people with disease that has a rapid pace or is dramatic in extent, but there is still a role for sequential single agents. I feel strongly about that.
What do we know about adding bevacizumab?
In metastatic disease, bevacizumab, which in essence is a drug that prevents blood vessel growth around tumors, it's an anti-angiogenic agent, is meant to enhance the effects of chemotherapy. And the trials to date have shown that there's an incremental benefit in terms of adding bevacizumab to chemotherapy in terms of the time until the disease progresses. The initial trials were done with a specific drug, a taxane, and subsequently that has been expanded to look at a number of other drugs. And I think the consistent finding is that there is an incremental improvement in outcome.
I would agree with that. There's also an increase in expense, and there's also the question of some rare side effects. It's hard to know if it improves actual overall survival, so this remains an area of controversy and a need for clinical trials.
What about triple-negative breast cancer?
The first comment I'd make about triple-negative disease is it's always existed. We've just changed the acronym for it, hormone receptor HER2-negative disease. And our thinking about that entity is that it tends to be a more aggressive type of breast cancer. And what we lack is a target for that type of breast cancer.
In these days of targeted therapy, we often use the phrase triple negative. As Bill said, that implies we don't have a specific target, but it also doesn't mean that this is a homogeneous group of patients. I think we expect with time there will be other targets that will be identified so that the term triple negative may be outmoded, I hope.